this and you like that. It's just another review podcast. We pick a show, sit down and chat. Now listen to the start of our show, cause it's now.
Hey, Dad.
Junior?
Yes, sir?
It is you, Junior.
Don't call me that, please.
But that's your fucking name.
It's been kind of a rough go for me lately, Dad. I'm doing this podcast for like over a year. It's called Just Another Review Podcast, or JARP. It's where we watch the first episode of a streaming service, rate it, and pair it with a film from our childhood.
Well, you don't say, do ya?
Somebody's recording me talking. It's on Apple and Spotify, and we're on Instagram at JARP_podcast.
So you let somebody record you?
Sean's recording me. That's how it works, Dad.
This is pathetic.
Thanks, Dad. And we welcome all feedback like that on email at jarppodcast@gmail.com.
So can we just put aside the daddy issues for now?
Thank you. It's really triggering.
Would you
me.
Like a hug, Junior?
Yeah, I will.
Junior, you want a hug? Come and give me a squeegee.
Oh, thanks, Sean Connery.
Ooh. Oh, yes, Junior. I also have a surprise for you, Mrs. and Mrs. Moneypenny. On this podcast, we're looking at the HBO Max series Peacemaker and looking back at the 1989 film Indiana Jones and the Last...
Temple of Doom.
And The Last Crusade.
Oh,
we're on the hunt for the Holy Grail.
Grail. And I also have a surprise for you, Sean. We have a special guest. Please welcome, through Zoom, it's Jeff.
Yay!
Jeff, the comic guy.
Well, that's so funny you have a song, because we used to have a song for Russ in high school.
What was the song?
Russ the Cautious Driver.
Russ the Cautious Driver?
I think that was after high school, for one thing.
Yeah, maybe. And he always drove so cautiously.
I drive at 10 and 2.
You know, well, let's just say, Russ, how many car accidents have you been in?
That I was driving?
Yeah.
Ooh,
that's a good follow-up.
I don't even know.
I thought I was going to get like a big goose egg there, big zero.
No, I have been rear-ended two or three times.
Mm.
Slow. So I don't think...
But there, nothing was of your fault.
I think I actually have rear-ended a guy on the number one.
I bet you have.
He was really nice.
It was a rest stop on the number one.
He was super nice.
He was super sweet. Nice guy. I haven't kept in touch, which I'm sad to say. But just that one time. And here he is, Jeff.
Yeah, it was a funny day. I was going a little too fast myself.
Yeah.
Taught me a lesson. Brought me down to speed.
All right, Jeff. Today in the episode, we are talking about the HBO Max show Peacemaker. Who's in it? I'll tell you. John Cena. You may recognize John Cena from WWE. What is John Cena's WWE's character's name? Does anyone know?
John Cena.
Just John Cena, yeah.
Interesting.
Didn't you have some sort of power move that's like made into a meme or something like that? Some super slam or something.
I don't know. Sonic boom.
I don't know his finishing move, actually. Oh. I just know he did the thing that you can't see me when he waves his hand in front of his face, and that's supposed to be something where he's invisible and it's an all-time
joke. He turns
joke.
Invisible and goes for the three count and then poof.
Maybe.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, he wasn't invisible, and he wasn't invisible in Blockers, a movie that he was in. Also a movie that he was also in called Trainwreck. We may recognize him on that.
I liked him in that movie.
Oh, you like Trainwreck?
Yeah.
Judd Apatow. Also,
I have not seen Trainwreck yet.
Oh, well, maybe it's not a train wreck at all.
No, because I refuse to watch anything by What's-Her-Face. Yeah, here we go.
Here we go. Jeff, if you've never listened to the podcast, Sean hates women and...
oh, no.
And it comes out
I'm so honored to be a guest.
And it comes out very subconsciously or consciously.
Women. I don't hate women. I have a problem with comedians that base their careers on plagiarizing jokes from other comedians.
Oh,
so you don't like Amy Schumer. Oh,
that's what I'm talking about. Amy, I forgot her name. Yeah, no, I don't
support... even know her name, but you believe she takes all her jokes.
I forgot her name. There's a difference between not knowing her name and forgetting
But what
her
you
name.
Have remembered is the fact that she steals all her jokes.
Dude, it's... been it's proven been... time and time and time again. Go down the rabbit hole. Okay. She's a joke stealer. I have a hard time supporting her.
All right, Dr. Dark Web. Dr. Also Dr. in the show, Dark Web? Dr. Dark Web. Also on the show is Jennifer Holland, which I don't recognize her from anything else. Robert Patrick, he plays Peacemaker's dad. You may recognize Robert Patrick from such films as Terminator 2. And
that's all you need.
That's all you need. He also was had an ongoing character on X-Files for a couple seasons. Mm. That's where I recognize him mostly.
Really? Was that before or after Terminator?
That was 2. After
Terminator okay. 2.
T2 put him on the map, that's for sure.
That's yeah. for sure. Steve Agee, who he was also on the onset portrayal of King Shark in the Suicide Squad, but he plays one of the agents. He's a comedian. I think he works quite a lot with Sarah Silverman. Daniel.
He's also been on the D&D podcast with Brian Posehn.
Oh, nice.
Many times.
Danielle Brooks, who plays Leota DeBio. You may recognize her from Orange is the New Black. This show was created by James Gunn, directed and written by. And the production info, guess what? This show was filmed in Vancouver.
Yeah.
2021. James Gunn wrote the first season in lockdown for fun after doing the Suicide Squad and between and before he actually started working on Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I guess he's doing. He's in production now on that. Anything else? Sure. Anything else in regards to introing the show? Anybody got anything?
I can't remember the blonde lady's name now, but I do know her. She was in a James Bond movie, and she was in, what was that movie with The Rock and the guy from Fast and Furious, but he's like the transporter. Who's that guy? Who's the transporter?
Hobbs and Shaw.
Hobbs and Shaw. She was Hobbs' sister in that.
Jason Statham.
She was Jason Statham's sister in that.
Oh.
Are we talking about... Are we talking about the girl who plays Emily Harcourt, Jennifer Holland?
Yes, that's the one.
She was. You're saying she was in Hobbs and Shaw.
She was in Hobbs and Shaw, and she was, I believe, in a James Bond movie as well. I can't remember which one because I do not like the current James Bond movies.
You don't like the Daniel Craig James Bond movies?
I cannot stand them with a passion. God.
Do you hate men?
I cannot stand men who show up in movies with their dicks shooting people and punching people, all that aggression.
Well, I don't think she's been in a Hobbs and Shaw movie, nor has she been in a James Bond movie, so I don't know if you know what you're talking about either.
Let's move on.
I will not follow up with this because it's not that important. Sean nailed it. Let's move on.
Despite HBO Max dropping 3 episodes at once, we only watched 1 episode because that's what we do on the show. This episode, episode 1, is called A Whole New World, directed by James Gunn. Here's the synopsis. Recovering from the events of Project Starfish, the Peacemaker leaves hospital to his all-American trailer and is visited by agents of Argus, which stands for Armed Revolutionaries Governing Under Secrecy, who tell Peacemaker he can either go back to jail or join Project Butterfly. Animal names are fun. Peacemaker agrees to do the latter because it's better than going to jail and goes to visit his daddy, the T-1000s of all fathers, Augie Smith. And he's not just a racist bigot daddy. Daddy Augie's also Peacemaker's supplier of helmets and other such technology. Thanks, Dad. Peacemaker has a dinner meeting in full costume with the Argus agents and collects intel to start his mission. But first comes first. Peacemaker goes to the bar, and after striking out with Agent Harcourt, he meets 80s lady and goes back to her house for sex. But this ain't no regular 80s lady. She's a femme fatale 80s lady. So they fight because it's a superhero show until Peacemaker can put on his new helmet and say, Sonic Boom! Oh yeah. And Peacemaker has an eagle sidekick named Eagly. Agent DeBio is the daughter of Amanda Waller, and Peacemaker has a buddy named Vigilante. This is Peacemaker.
Nice synopsis, Mister.
Thank you, Mister.
Mister
Russ
Blank,
Mister Sean.
Jeff? I do have a comment.
Okay,
there
yes, comment
please
away.
Insert comment here.
Ding. So there was a question from your email about today's show that also raised my ire, that you just raised my ire on as well. You said there was an action sequence because it's a superhero show.
It is a superhero show.
When it's as simple as being a action comedy show, when your question says that some people are feeling superhero fatigue, which is a thought you're putting into my mind by asking that question that way. I think it's an action comedy show, and yeah, the character happens to be a superhero. That doesn't mean there needs to be action in it, just as a thought experiment precursor. There.
Right.
I think it's when you say that people are having superhero fatigue, I think there's a label there that because they're in costume, but really if there was a Tango and Cash movie series and it was Tango and Cash 9, this time it's personal, I think people would say, I think people are getting a little tired of Tango and Cash. It doesn't really matter that but it's an action comedy. So people would really say something like, people are getting tired of the buddy action comedy, you know, series, blah, blah, blah. But in this case, I don't think it's necessarily that a superhero has to have action, and that's what defines them in a way.
It seems to be what defines the medium, though. Most, whether it's a movie or a agree. Show, it is, there requires some sort of action.
That would be the expectation, yes. But I'm just bringing up a thought experiment from the dots that you
tell me more about this Tango dropping. And Cash.
Tango and Cash.
It's a fantastic action movie from, I believe, the 80s.
That's Jack Palance, the best bad guy ever.
Was he? I can't even remember. Sylvester Stallone and...
Kurt Russell.
Oh, my God. Kurt Russell. Yep. Best couple of action sequences in an 80s action movie.
It's a pretty fun buddy movie. It's fun. You know, during the time of Lethal Weapons and stuff like that, they took a stab at it. It was just a one-off. But I quite enjoyed Tango and Cash.
Major testosterone.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was good.
Yeah.
Except for the final explosion that was clearly, even as a kid, CGI'd onto a building that was not being damaged at all. A fiery explosion overlaid a building that was just sitting there. It was pretty bad.
Now, let's get back to the superhero thing. You know, he goes to his dad's place to get these elaborate helmets. Now, we didn't see any sort of helmet power in the Suicide Squad or anything like that. Now, is this something that Peacemaker's always had and we never got to see in the Suicide Squad? Or is this a new addition that they've added just to make him seem more, quote-unquote, like a superhero and not just a strong, big, muscly guy? You know, giving him helmet powers is what I'm talking about.
I think it's for the show. My only knowledge of... I've been reading comics for 25 years.
Oh, yeah.
My
give us some
only
history.
Knowledge of Peacemaker is from a 1987 comic book, Crisis on Infinite Earths number 12, mm-hmm. and it's only one or two panels, and that's the only way I know him from, which is, you know, from 25, 30 years ago. So I don't really know a lot about him aside from, at the time, he was from another dimension with some other characters that got enveloped into the DC universe at that time. That was the purpose of the Crisis story. So they didn't have all these multiple dimensions or whatever. So they're mentioning people like Judo, like people that are coming up in the series, and he's in the opening intro there, but characters like Judo Master, they eventually mentioned some other characters that were in that kind of same company. That I can't really say now because we're only doing episode one, but there are certain people who were in this little bubble of creators and artists at the time that you'll kind of probably see pop up in this show from the sounds of it that were part of, you know, I can't remember the name of the company, but let's say Fawcett Comics, for example, which used to own Shazam. I can't remember which one this was, but that company had this many superheroes, and then eventually they became DC Comics properties because DC bought them out. So that's where Peacemaker originally came from. So I don't know if he ever had like special helmets and stuff. I think it was just made for the show. I understood he was just some crazy guy who just shot people as a vigilante. And that's pretty much his whole thing.
Yeah, like from Suicide Squad, I thought he was just a big kind of muscly, tough guy and all that. But, you know, like he's having buildings falling on him. He's jumping out of, you know, apartment windows and landing on the concrete pretty much unscathed. And then, you know,
on his broken clavicle.
Yeah. You know, and he's had that x-ray and she says, you know, out of everything that happened, you just had a broken clavicle. So he must have some sort of superhuman strength or something like that. He was going one-to-one with that beast 80s chick at the end. And she seemed to be some sort of female Hulkish thingy. And he was going, well, he was kind of getting his ass kicked there at the end, and he had to put on the helmet to save himself. But at the same time, you know, taking some pretty big hits, and for a regular Joe, they'd be toast by then.
I think they're taking a little bit of, what's the word?
Artistic
liberty.
Artistic liberty with the size of John Cena. I think they're allowing this. You can buy that this guy's big.
I find with all superhero shows, though, ones, if they're not Thor, they're just a regular person like Hawkeye or something like that, they all have a little bit of more ability to take the hit than a regular Joe. They've all got a little Captain mm-hmm. America serum in their blood veins.
Maybe that's just a testament to their training. You know, they're just, you know, they're like well-trained boxers. They can take a hit, right?
Yeah, like in sports, except for soccer. But if you get hurt in sports, you keep on going.
Except for soccer, yeah.
All right. Would everyone agree that this is probably the best TV show opening credits that we've seen for a while? Or is it just me?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty entertaining, and it set the stage for some campy comedy, and yeah, it's too bad that after the opening credits, it kind of dipped downward after that. But
oh, that was all right. Yeah. I like the opening credits. It kind of sets, like Russ said, it sets you up for okay, let's just turn my brain off here
yeah.
and have some
yeah.
fun.
Yeah, and then the first line is like, oh wow, you got shot and a building falls on you, and you've only got a broken clavicle or what it is. Like right away, like it's like the show is telling you, don't worry about it. Let's just have fun.
And right. the whole fuck Aquaman. Oh, there's a swear jar. You know the whole fuck Aquaman sequence with the
I like that sequence.
Yeah, it was pretty funny.
Rizwan's yeah. Jamal.
He's talking about him like fucking a fish or some sort of fish. He caught him screwing up.
That guy's from Schitt's Creek.
Yeah, I think he's a Canadian. Maybe he's not. But yeah,
he's on Schitt's Creek. He must be because they filmed this here, right?
Yeah, yeah. I think they used a lot of Canadian actors in Peacemaker.
Yeah, there's a couple Canadians in the opening credits there that we didn't see in episode one. That local boy, Lachlan Monroe, for starters. And then I'm sure there's a couple others that are
hey,
local.
Hey, what was the cab driver, Tim? There's a cab driver in this who takes his helmet for payment after he leaves the hospital.
Right.
Right.
I can't remember his last name, but it's a guy named Tim who used to come to our improv shows.
Tim Zhang, yeah.
Tim Zhang. Is that not him?
No, it is on Internet Movie Database. I don't know.
That's him.
You're saying
Tim. I thought that was him. I was like, I swear to God, that's a guy named Tim, but I can't remember his last name. Don't bother to follow up, but I'm 100% sure that was him.
That's awesome. Hey, Tim, if you want to come on the show.
You guys know someone famous.
You met John Cena.
That's awesome. Oh, Venus Sood's also in it, but I don't know when. Yeah, there's probably a lot of Vancouver Canadian actors that are in the show.
So with the Peacemaker kind of helmet being a new thing, then I imagine maybe his dad being this whole mastermind and making this tech and all that, that's got to be new for the show then as well? Or does his dad have
I didn't see it coming. When they opened that closet, right. I was like, what the... What is this, the TARDIS? Like, where is it? Where are they going now?
They just walked through a wall, but everything does, like, it created this false reality where there is, like, actually a background to the wall.
Yeah, and that's just kind of out of the blue for the DC universe, eh?
Is it? What do you mean?
Well, I don't know, because we've had Batman and Justice League and shit like that and Aquaman, which has some sort of, you know, magical stuff in it, but this kind of portal to another whole dimension and stuff like that, you know, DC doesn't normally tackle that kind of stuff.
Yeah, they really doubled down with Doctor Strange, and now it's just normal and they can do whatever they want. And Guardians of the Galaxy opened up the entire universe, so Marvel did things right. And if DC's doing this to kind of breadcrumb us, then that's fine. But
it came out of left field, the first time,
this is like the weirdest, this is a weird way to do it.
I didn't really like the whole, like the personality of the dad, Augie Smith, does not match the technology that he's providing. Like there just doesn't seem to be I can't make the link of like, well, here's this like bigot, racist, completely narrow-minded dude who's also this brilliant inventor, scientist. I don't know. It just, I couldn't make the leap.
And his haircut. I mean, his haircut just threw
his
me off.
His hair is terrible,
What's that all about? I don't know.
I'm not saying scientists can't be bigots. I'm sure there's lots of bigot scientists, but it just doesn't seem to be. Like, I think, I don't know.
You couldn't put the two to, you couldn't rationalize his personality with his sort of intellect, right? Someone that intellectual can't be that much of a... I don't know.
Well,
close-minded.
Even the visuals that they used to like show us what his laboratory looked like didn't seem like it meshed with anything
house. Yeah, if he had like a crappy garage with crap everywhere and everything, but he managed to get this thing and it happens to be made out of this shiny metal.
Yes.
Okay. Yes. I'd buy that.
Yes, I think so. That's what I would like to see. Just see.
Yeah, but he's got like this well-polished secret closet.
CGI.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
Made by someone who didn't know what the show was going to look like yet, and they just went ahead and built it, and then it was like totally contradicts the look and feel of everything else.
Thank you. Yes.
Exactly. They're like, whatever. We go on the air tomorrow. Just go with it.
Yes. Rizwan Manji is who was in Schitt's Creek is a Canadian, born in Ontario.
I like him. I like his. He's got a good look and face and voice. Everything for comedy. He's good. I like
character
him.
Actor. Yeah, for sure.
Speaking of things kind of not clicking too much, I know this is supposed to be far-fetched and not quite based in reality and all that, but the whole bar fight scene just did not jive with me. When she turned down the one guy and then he goes away, and he was clearly a big guy and you know, take care of himself, but like, what did he do? Go back to his friends and cry, and then he's got his one friend that all of a sudden comes back and says, "Hey, what'd you say to my friend?" And like, she kicks his ass. Like, I don't know. I just didn't buy that. You know, here's this giant guy. What did he, you know, he got, like I said, denied, and would he go back and cry to his friends? And then his, like who does that? Who goes back, "Hey, you denied my friend. I'm going to kick your ass," and go so aggressively up to a female like that? I don't know. I didn't buy it. I know they were looking for something to show off her
strength.
Yeah, her strengths and skill sets. But, I mean, for James Gunn, I think he could have written something a little smarter than that.
Yeah.
Ladies. Yeah, I agree with that. I really don't like when movies, when kids... today or not kidding yeah I mean movies that take place now when there's still bullies, like in that movie, other DC show, Shazam, right? There's this crippled kid, or whatever word I'm supposed to use,
that's what they call him,
cripple and bad names and stuff, and they're beating up on him and the whole school crowds around and no one's doing anything. Like, in 20 whatever year that came out, there's no way anybody would even be able to look at someone funny without someone standing up for them. I just don't see bullies being that bold nowadays, or being so 80s themed and actually beating up on kids with a crowd of 400 people around them with no one stepping in.
The world isn't black and white anymore.
It takes me out of it completely. Yeah, it's hard to get over it. So yeah, that I noticed that as well. And the guy that first got turned away, he was gone for a good minute and a half before his friend goes, "She said what?" And then walks over. I'm like, wait, how long did it take to tell that story?
My friend just built up the confidence to ask you out and you reject him?
Yeah.
I think I'm going to beat you up now.
And then he tried to fight her when she rejected him to begin with, too. And it's like, come on.
Yeah. It's.
It could also be like a thing where the guy was like, if a woman's doing something like that, you just do kind of play along for the first couple of seconds. Like, what's happening here? And then he got his ass kicked a little bit once she had him in a bad position or whatever, but you can justify it however you want. But
probably would have been better if just like a second guy came and tried to hit on her, you know, again and be like, "Oh, my buddy's striked out. I'm going to try again." And then maybe he like put his hand on her or something like that to aggravate her. But yeah. I mean, here within about 30 seconds, we just rewrote this scene a lot better than it was written by someone. Could have done a lot better
job
than that.
Mr. Gunn,
this is like that, if you want to contact that movie, what was that movie that just came out with Better Call Saul in it?
Nobody.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately the movie would have been fine if the one, and spoiler alert, if the one scene that kicked everything off in the bus was a bit more purposeful than him just deciding to wail on those guys because they were being a little bit rude to that woman. If those guys were being way more aggressive, then I would have been more justified that his knee-jerk reaction was to just kick their ass and the rest of the movie could take place.
Right.
But that scene just wasn't enough to kick that off, and it didn't justify the rest of the movie for me, and I was out the whole rest of the movie.
Oh, that's too bad. I kind of enjoyed that movie, but I see what you're talking about.
I would have loved the movie if the impetus for him losing it
was a little bit more justified.
Yeah, the catalyst was more justified, absolutely. Yeah.
Jeff, you and I are both fans of Dr. Horrible's sing-along blog. I found like when John Cena's the Peacemaker is sitting in his trailer checking his voicemails and he's getting the voicemails from Vigilante, that just really reminded me of, like, I got vibes from Dr. Sing-along. How he's got like kind of his like evil nemesis, the sweaty guy. Or not his evil nemesis, like his evil sidekick.
Yeah, I know of Vigilante. I've never read anything with him in it. So I didn't really know what they were. I don't know if he's a goofy character or what, but yeah, they're obviously showing, hey, this is a behind the scenes, this is a day in the life,
right?
Kind of show, and that helped crank up the comedy quite a bit.
Yeah, you guys happy with Eagly? You like Eagly?
I think Eagly stole the show. Oh. To be honest with you,
yeah,
yeah,
that was your favorite. That's your favorite.
My favorite part was the little eagle inserts. For
the
sure.
CG was good. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. He gave him a hug in the garage. He's like, quick, take a picture.
Yeah. It was funny that nobody was there to see it, so I thought maybe they're going to play that like he's seeing the eagle giving him a hug, but then it turns out the eagle's actually kind of smart. So,
right.
Yeah, I wonder if eagle's going to be, again, we've touched base on this, on other like the brain of Inspector Gadget, you know what I mean? Let's be real, Peacemaker's got a little bit of leak in his dinghy or a couple bricks short of whatever the saying is, but
like Peacemaker's about to walk off a pier and Eagly will come and save him.
Well,
somehow.
Yeah, or just Eagly will bring some piece of evidence that will, you know, he's like, I wonder how this happened, and then Eagly will drop like some key piece of evidence in front of him to help him unlock some sort of mystery or, you know, detective work or something like that, you know.
Because he does actually seem pretty useless so far, to be quite blunt.
Yeah, when he dropped out, would he bring him a ferret at the end or something?
He's good time Charlie.
What's he done?
He built some up.
I don't know. I think we're going to see Eagly do something pretty badass here.
He's Peacemaker's
hype. I hope
man.
So, anyways.
Hype bird. Everyone needs a hype bird.
Right. He's like Flavor Flav. Right. The Flavor Flav of Peacemaker.
He's like Gata.
That checks. Yep.
Russ, you really enjoyed the Tidy Whitey dance, right?
Yeah, I loved it in the Suicide Squad when he got in his Tidy Whiteys, and I loved it here. I could
we get it. It's funny. It dragged on a little too long. Maybe that was for the ladies or for the gentlemen that like John Cena in his Tidy Whiteys, but yeah, some of the jokes lasted a couple beats too long. Eh? Mm-hmm. No? Yes?
Yeah, I mean, him singing in the girl's apartment was... I mean, I get it. He's kind of having a moment, and they're showing us him. His attitude goes from hot to cold, and he's turning things around, and they're playing that out in real time. But sometimes playing that out in real time, it's a bit of a drag out sort of thing. Plus, if she was doing more in the background to make us go, oh, what's going on? But there was only one cutaway that did that, so it would have been more intriguing that justified him singing for so long, but he did go on for a bit too long in that scene.
I don't know. I thought it could have been another 13 minutes longer.
Yeah. Take up the whole episode.
Sure. Why not?
Call it the Tidy Whitey Dance.
Tidy Whitey Dance.
Otherwise, it was fine. I mean, it's really nitpicking.
To me, I wish the show started with his butt cheeks in the hospital and then went cut right to the Tidy Whitey Dance in the apartment.
Right.
And left everything else aside.
You want to talk about that guy that you rear-ended on the highway again?
I wouldn't mind.
Memories.
Danielle Brooks' character is the reveal of Viola Davis's character, which I thought was good, actually. I appreciate that because I feel like in you know, the Suicide Squad movie 1 and that no one likes, and then the Suicide Squad movie 2 that everyone likes, Viola Davis's character plays a very important role in this whole idea of the Suicide Squad. So to have her linked to the show, I think is cool. I thought maybe they were just going to do without her, obviously, because Viola Davis wasn't going to come back for a TV show at this level. But it's good to actually see her on Zoom there, and I thought that was cool.
Yeah, they showed footage of the movie as well as a recap.
Right,
yeah. That was kind of cool.
That was cool,
It's interesting that the properties, you know, in our age, at our age anyway, we don't see stuff like that cross over, so it's interesting to see that stuff crawl over from movie to TV. To us, it's a breach of something. You know, I'm 44, so to me, like movies and TV, they just don't mix.
Right.
They don't cross over, and now Marvel's introduced that, and I'm sure some other things have too, but... it's very interesting to see because you always think of movie theater quality and TV quality is completely different.
Yeah. Right?
And then you're seeing this whole world is just consistent. You're like, oh, wow, it's just an extension of that. And your brain is still kind of catching up to that thought.
You know, it does that actually well. And it's kind of funny. Cobra Kai has been doing that lately.
Yes. They do that really well.
And they've actually been using scenes from the movies that hit the cutting room floor that actually weren't in the movie. So they've taken some deleted scenes from The Karate Kid and actually got them in to Cobra Kai as sort of story elements and stuff. Super cool, man. Because yeah, it'd go back and you've got like the young Ralph Macchio, but then doing a scene, you're like, I don't remember this scene. And then yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So yeah, really cool. Really cool.
There was also a shot of previously in Suicide Squad at the very end of that shot, the lady that knocked out Waller.
Right. With the golf club. That wasn't in the movie.
She was getting that wasn't in the movie.
No, you're right. You're right. Yeah. That was, yeah, we saw her get arrested. Which makes sense of why she's not in the show as well. So that's a nice little continuity thing as well.
I like that the other two agents touch on it saying, hey, we're being punished for what we did in Suicide Squad, right? You
know, Yeah. The movie that we were all in, remember?
Yes.
Yeah, the one that we remember. Yeah.
I love that movie. Great movie.
It was very fun. Very, very fun.
Yeah, we just watched it before we watched this.
So did you? Good. Cool.
Yeah.
And I think with that, I've got a sort of a question. Is the sort of R-rated more mature risks with these quote-unquote superhero genre, is that the new way to go? You know, what Deadpool's doing, Suicide Squad, what Peacemaker here has done, and do you think we'll ever see Marvel, I mean, I guess with Venom, didn't they? I guess Deadpool is a Marvel.
Deadpool and Venom. Yeah, it is now, yeah.
But let's say stereotypical Marvel, like a Wolverine. Oh, I guess. Yeah, we did see a rated R Wolverine. Okay, you know what? Forget my fucking question.
No, your question's good.
But these are all done before Disney acquired it too, right?
Right.
Like Logan and...
Do you think Marvel will ever sort of take like their IP, like Guardians of the Galaxy or the Avengers, I guess they're gone now, the Eternals, and ever sort of take that more mature rated R risk with it?
I think it's a slippery slope. I don't mind humor in this stuff. That's why I do like the Marvel movies. But I do think that, you know, I don't think just because Star-Lord's in a scene with Captain America that Captain America should be brought down to his level to be goofy.
Right,
I think
right.
if he stays in character and Star-Lord's the comedic whatever for the scene, I'm okay with that. Because eventually you see people doing, since the pandemic, they're doing their news reports and everything and their cat walks on the table, their kids walk into the room. Like, that's real life, right? But I think there's a certain bit of iconography that you need to keep with, like, keep Batman movies Batman. Like, keep right. him iconic looking and make Robin, when he finally shows up in the movie, make him iconic as well. Like, make it more purposeful. Superman should also not be a joke. I think Superman should be a beacon of hope, and they've completely screwed that up.
Right.
He's absolutely not a beacon of hope, and it's a slippery slope where they just waste these characters and using comedy. I think that's good for certain characters like Peacemaker, Deadpool, Wolverine. I think that's good. Adult R-rated stuff, obviously good for Wolverine, Deadpool, etc., but not to the point of just for the sake of it.
Right.
I think if the story is good, I think that's awesome. But
like a rated R Captain America would never really fit itself because he doesn't that's not his
he's not gonna say the F word, but he might cut a guy's head off if he throws a shield hard enough. That could make it R-rated,
right?
But not to the point where it needs to be R-rated, because that's not what good movies need.
Yeah, exactly, right? Also, adding Captain America's shield decapitating people isn't also gonna improve that franchise, right?
If they get the mutants into the Marvel universe, which I think they're doing, they get a R-rated Wolverine movie and he just kills people when he, like, because he's a monster, he's supposed to just murder people, right? Especially when he goes berserk.
Yeah,
but he also used to fight in World War II with Captain America. So if they do an R-rated Wolverine and then get that through, and then they have a movie where Captain America, for whatever reason, has to fight with Wolverine, then, and that happens in the comics all the time, Wolverine's still Wolverine and Cap's still Cap, but it's an R-rated movie with Captain America in it,
right,
for example.
That's a one way we could maybe loophole get around it.
And he'd still be Captain America. He's not going to show up in the movie and go, hey, motherfuckers, it's me now.
Right.
He's still going to be Captain America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Dude, I'm super excited about watching a World War II or one movie with Captain America and Wolverine. Now.
That'd be quite the
putting that in my
yin and yang going on there, Captain America and Wolverine, you know?
Is it World War One or Two, Jeff? When would they be?
Two.
Two, okay.
Definitely World War Two, Russ. They fight the Nazis, and they are only in the World War Two.
Okay, so thanks for the clarification.
Possibly World War Three. We'll see where things go.
Cross our fingers.
Okay, I got another one here for you, Jeff. I didn't know too much about Thor until his movies came out years and years ago in the Marvel, but that was
my first
Thor experience.
What about Adventures in Babysitting?
Mm, yeah, Yeah, but I didn't. Anyways, I didn't know anything about Thor. I didn't realize he was such a badass and all that. And I feel that he would give Superman a pretty good run for his money. So who's gonna win, Thor versus Superman? They're both kind of demigods, aren't they?
No. Thor is an alien,
right?
So he has whatever. Well, so Superman.
Isn't Superman an alien?
Yes. Yeah, but you said he's a demigod, so
okay, sorry.
Thor's an alien.
Okay.
Perceived as a god because of their technology from humans. So I don't know what the power scale, like, they've never really defined his power scale, whereas Superman, he gets his power from the yellow sun, so that gives you an indication of how powerful he is. If he's in another planet, or if he's away from the sun, or if he's been drained, or it's under a red sun, blah, 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 you go, okay, I can accept that he's a bit weaker right now. Whereas Thor seems to be weaker under certain circumstances, and that's about it. So it's inconsistent writing for whatever reason, because I think of what I just described, because they don't have that scale. So Thor is as powerful can be until it's convenient to show how powerful somebody else is, like the Red Hulk, for example, beat Thor just by outsmarting him, when really, does that mean the Red Hulk's more powerful than Thor? Not necessarily, but they want to show how powerful the Red Hulk is. This is in the comics. So
the Red Hulk.
I would say, yeah.
I don't know anything about the Red Hulk. That sounds cool.
You'll probably see him eventually in the movies. So I would say Superman would ultimately win. I mean, I don't really like, you know, my dad could beat up your dad scenarios, but I would say Superman would win. But he has more powers. He's a bit more stoic. He's a bit more smart. Thor is just kind of a punch him, fight him kind of guy, whereas Superman has been portrayed for a very long time as also intelligent.
I have seen both of your dads, and I think Jeff's dad would win.
Yeah, I think so too.
can't agree more.
He's quite tall. Follow-up question. Can anyone beat Superman?
Zod.
Technically, I would say no. Yes. But
good question, Russ.
But ultimately no.
Ha ha. So why is there a movie called Batman versus Superman?
Oh God! Do you really want that rabbit hole?
No. But how about let's go down this rabbit hole? Superhero costume. This is something that I don't like where we're going from Iron Man to where we are today. The whole idea of this kind of super suit for Iron Man was it. You could see the development of it. You could see how much work it was to build an Iron Man suit, and now a Spider-Man costume can be made by a 3D printer and then just snapped on. Like, I don't even understand how, like, superheroes now are just wearing the regular clothes and then suddenly Spider-Man's wearing his Spider-Man outfit.
Nanotechnology, right?
So is this what it is? Like, are we okay with this idea of nanotechnology, or do we think it's just lazy?
It's from the comics, unfortunately. Okay. So they did take it from that. But before they introduced the nanotechnology in Infinity War, what's his name? Star-Lord was using his behind-his-ear clicker. So that made his mask appear and reappear. Alien technology? Okay, fine. But there were a lot of things where things were just appearing and disappearing, like Optimus Prime's trailer in the 80s. Like, it just isn't there. It just disappeared when it's not needed. So I really don't like... 80s
cartooning would definitely be lazy.
In the cartoon, can be lazy. We can get away with it. But this is like, yeah, I really don't like... I really don't like the disappearing, reappearing stuff, which is why I actually wrote somewhere in one of your questions. So I like that. I don't know if I can do a spoiler alert here, but
spoiler
for the latest Spider-Man movie. Have you seen this latest Spider-Man
movie? Oh yeah, we spoiled the shit out of it last episode. Yeah. That's okay.
Yeah.
So they basically do a soft reboot, kind of, towards the end, where he's no longer Iron Man Jr. He's now going to be, moving forward, the friendly neighborhood Spider-Man
right.
in his regular costume, no gadgets, no this aside from what he does himself, which is good. So I don't like the reappearing costumes, but it is from stuff from the comics that's been done before. It was called something in Iron Man 2, which is what it was called in the comics too. I can't remember what it's called.
Did Spider-Man lose his suit at the end of Spider-Man, or you just think he won't have support for it anymore? So
yeah, he's kind of gone off on his own, and they showed him making his suit, and the very last shots were him in a regular cloth blue and red suit. So that was their way of saying, all right, we're done with all that Iron Man Jr. shit.
Yeah, at the end, wasn't that his original suit?
It's very similar.
Looked very old. Looked like one of the old original suits.
Yeah, it looked like he had just made it in brighter red and brighter blue.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was very vibrant.
Jeff, I think I've heard you say this before. You're not stoked on the multiverse idea. You didn't really like how the comics did it. And now that the movies are getting into it, and now you've seen Spider-Man, No Way Home, what's your initial thoughts of how the cinematic universe is going to deal with the multiverse?
I don't mind it when it's done well.
Right.
I hate when it's done because they're out of ideas. I can't stand the idea of, I can't remember what the show was, but there was a show years ago where it was about this other dimension, other Earth, and everything bled over, and there was two of everybody, and I just hate that's where the drama comes from. When you have all these great characters that no matter what, you should never run out of ideas. Like Days of Our Lives has been on for 40 years for a reason. Like, it's not hard, even though those stories are terrible, it's not hard to come up with a good plot.
Sure.
And then have the characters as characters react to those things. Right. That's what makes good writing. You don't need constant stuff going on all the time to justify a story.
Right. Are you a Loki fan? Did you like Loki?
I did enjoy Loki. I loved Loki. I think Tom Hiddleston charisma carried it, which is part of why I liked it. Okay. But I did like it. So I'm against multidimensional stuff for the fact of multidimensional stuff. If it's used well, I'm all for it. Okay. I've rarely seen it used well.
Except for Loki and Spider-Man No Way Home.
I think Marvel is doing a very good job now.
Yep.
Of course, I've been inoculated for 25 years for all this stuff. So it's seeing it done live better and slowly. That's the thing, it's being done slowly. It's not this immediate impact thing that everyone has to knee-jerk react to.
Right.
It's being introduced slowly, and it means something, and that's why they're doing it right.
Any thoughts on Doctor Strange and the Multiverse of Madness? Are you excited for that?
I'm excited for it. I don't know what it's going to do. Are they going to do some sort of a soft reboot? Is all hell going to break loose? Do they need to introduce... What I don't want them to do, I don't like introducing new characters from other dimensions like the Flash TV show does. Like, why are all the villains from other worlds? Why can't they be just villains from this world? Why do they have to be interdimensional? It makes no sense. So I hope they're not going to use it as a way of bringing in new characters and having them live in our Earth now.
But
unless it's done really well,
right.
It has to be done well, because that's a stupid writing.
But think of the idea of the multiverse. If it existed now and there's a Jeff in every multiverse, one of those Jeffs is you, and one of those Jeffs is a diabolical evil villain, potentially, like, that would make sense. And if that diabolical evil villain was able to leave his universe and come to ours, I could see that happening. Isn't that justifiable enough?
Yeah, but it depends how it's done, and like, did he just trip over a rock one day and ended up here, or what's the actual
purpose? And what's why does he come here and not just stay in his own universe?
Yeah, and does he get sucked here? Is he out of his own realm against his own will, or is he here? Is he just straight up evil? Does he have a plan? Does he have a plot? Is he just trying to get home? Like, it all has to be written well.
Okay.
Whereas historically, it's just been another dimension for the sake of another dimension. Two U's for the sake of two U's. Isn't that enough shock? Wow. No, it's not. Write a story for sake.
Man, this shit is awesome.
You suck.
Well, then, let's rate it. This is the part of the episode where we rate the episode out of 5, 0, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. 5 being it's the greatest thing since sliced bread. And yeah. So I'll go first, I guess. I gave it a 2.5 out of 5. I thought it seemed thin on content and writing, although it was funny, but it was lacking any character and relationship building. It is supposed to be a bit campy and a bit of a B-hero movie, but I felt that that also translated as far as the quality of the show, and it came across like a bit of a B-movie itself. John Cena did well reprising his role, but he and Eagly are the only characters that I cared about. The laughs were okay, but everything else was poor, so just a middle of the road for me.
Okay. I'll give it a 3.0. No, 3.0.
A little bit more.
It's a 0.5 more than you, Sean. Overall, a lukewarm first episode. Table setting. I'm excited to see where it goes. There's funny moments, but not necessarily funny throughout. Again, best intro of a show that I've seen for a while. I think at my old age, my ripe old age of 40 something, vulgarity is, I think it just has to be used creatively, or it just feels kind of hacky and juvenile, and this felt at times kind of hacky and juvenile. But I'm excited to see where it goes. I have faith in James Gunn, despite the fact of all those like lazy writing things that we pointed out earlier. but I've got faith. Jeff, what do you think? What would you rate it? 1, 2, 3,
oh,
4, 5?
Boys, I didn't see any notes in your email rating system, yeah, so I will I'll free fly here. It.
Yeah,
free I fly. Would actually, I'm going to go up another 0.5 from you both. I'm going to say 3.5.
Nice.
I would say I agree with Russ's, setting the table thing. I think for what this is and what the genre is, it's obviously like Deadpool. It's off to the side of the, I would like Superman to be heroic and stoic. Yeah. And I would like Batman to be an asshole and just go for broke and be Batman. And this is the off to the side humor thing. And I think in terms of the setup and the payoff, the end fight and everything was showed a cool thing at a cool moment, that exploding helmet. That was a cool ending, it's over, clearly over. I think that was a really cool moment for him to have done something right, despite being absolutely down. Like, he was absolutely done. He was going to die.
He needed a win, right?
And then he needed a win, and then he got that cool thing that he knew was there, and that was smart of him to go there. He let Eagly fly away because he knew he was going to blow that thing up, and Eagly needed to be out of the way. So all these little things I really like. And I like, in improv, it's always about getting to the point, right, Russ?
Yeah,
but, here, get to the point, Russ. When they're playing on that conversation in the hallway at the hospital for 5-6 minutes, I love that stuff. I like when they explore.
That was fun banter. That was
silly
fun.
Little banter conversations, but actually helps develop things to set the tone. Show me who Peacemaker really is. Let him talk more. I don't want to just see him running around shooting. I want to see how vulnerable he is and how stupid he is, but see what he thinks about things. So you have to let him talk.
Yeah.
So little moments like that where you do flesh out and just goes on and on, but it's still entertaining. I appreciate that it wasn't boring. I didn't really find even the dancing scene. I mean, I know it went on a little bit long, but I think of the intersplice, that lady in the background going to get a knife, one or two more shots of her doing something. I think that would have filled that scene out better versus him just talking to himself nonstop for, save for that one shot of her grabbing the knife. Yeah, 3.5.
Nice. That's right. We're going to pair our Peacemaker episode with Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade, because both of them have daddy issues. The release date of Indiana Jones and the Last Crusade was May 24th, 1989. It was a budget of $48 million. It made $472 million at the box office, directed by Stevie Spielberg, who loves movies about daddy stuff. Also, story
broken
by
families. Yeah, that's his niche, man.
He loves a good missing father or relationship issues with daddy. A story by George Lucas. You guys ever heard of George Lucas?
No.
Okay. Tell us more.
I don't know anything else. That's all I wrote. This movie stars Harrison Ford, Sean Connery, John Rhys-Davies, River Phoenix. And, I forgot to write down the female actor. Is it Judy Doody?
Judy Doody? Is that her name?
No.
It certainly doesn't fit the what she looks like.
Allison Doody. Last name, Allison Doody.
Mm. Now, River Phoenix, he wasn't 13-year-old. He wasn't 13 when they filmed it. He's just portraying Indiana Jones as a 13-year-old. Correct?
I believe it must be, yes.
Yeah, he was a little bit older than 13 when he did that.
Yeah, I believe the movie says 13-year-old Indiana Jones.
First off, this movie's fucking awesome. A fantastic movie.
Sure is.
Still holds up to this day. I mean, there's a couple if you want to nitpick about some of the compositing things and all that, but they use so many practical sets for this stuff and all that, and even though it's 89, I don't want to do the math, what's that, 33 years old now, it's fantastic. And I used to think that Raiders of the Lost Ark was my favorite Indiana Jones, and I think it still is, but I think Last Crusade, after watching it again, it certainly made me ponder that idea, like, is this my favorite Indiana Jones, or is Raiders? Great friggin' movie.
This has been my favorite Indiana Jones movie since the day I saw it. Love this movie.
And here's a controversial take for me. I don't think it does hold up for me outside of the Sean Connery, Harrison Ford stuff. I love the banter between father and son, but kind of anything outside of that, I found myself getting a little bored.
Really? Even all the action sequences and nope, fair enough.
I think they do a great job of interweaving, some spy stuff, even though it's not like, James Bond type spy stuff, but there's, backstabbing and treachery and One scene always leads to another. You always know where they are, what they're doing, and why. For me, in a movie and TV show, that's so important. If I don't know where they are, what they're doing, and why, I'm completely checked out. And this movie just goes from scene to scene. Everything means something. Once they discover something new, it's on to the next thing. And I think it goes at a really good pace that everyone knows what their role is in the movie. And I think they just do a really good job of tying that in with action, comedy, and
it's like
overall
a
mystery.
A treasure hunt or a detective case, but yet you're never sort of scratching your head like, huh, and confused about what's going on.
He's an archaeologist. The whole plot is around him being an archaeologist and being the one to solve this archaeology mystery. So,
right.
Like, how better can you hear the phrase, hey, we're going to write a movie that's an archaeological mystery? I mean, how bored would you be? And then they ended up doing this? That's amazing.
Yeah. Well, yeah, exactly. To go from the 1 minute pitch to what it is now.
Well, everyone knows that as an archaeologist, most of the time you're spent in the library.
Yeah, 70% of the time it's in the library, and X never marks the spot. I like that. I've got a little note here. I thought that was great foreshadowing for the tomb in the library in Italy. There, whatever.
See, that's where I started fading out because that is a great moment. Like, aha! He kind of climbs the windy stairs, and the camera pans down and shows the X. But then when they go down and they bust the tile, there is no X on the floor. And it took me, I mean, just a little continuity issue, but it just took me out of the movie.
Oh, was there a wide shot where it was missing?
It was a close-up shot where it was missing. So the wide shot, you could very clearly see the X on the floor. And then when they got close to the tile, the X was gone. It was just like and again, maybe this is a rust issue and I didn't, and for some reason I picked up on it wrong, but it seemed like when they did the close-up shots, the X was no longer there.
We know
they're probably allowed to show the X, but they weren't. Don't dig up. Don't smash that part of the floor. And they were like, "Okay, we'll smash over there.
Right,
no problem."
Yeah. One was the real library, and the other was a soundstage.
Jeff, you mentioned James Bond. I've actually got a note here that I feel Indiana Jones. I was starting to draw a ton of parallels between him and James Bond. I just feel that Indiana Jones is a grittier version of James Bond. You know, he's. You know, every Indiana Jones movie, there's a different sort of Bond girl, Indiana Jones girl. He's basically an international spy. You know, he is an archaeologist, but I mean, and then through his findings and stuff, he's always sort of helping the good guys defeat the bad guys inadvertently, you know, defeating the Nazis or whatever, even though he was just on a treasure hunt to begin with, you know, and he's tough. He's always beating up the bad guys. So yeah, I see he's basically a spy, maybe. Kind of?
Essentially. I mean, he's kind of a vigilante. That's what I always kind of liked about him. He's a teacher, but his archaeological activities are actually kind of vigilantism.
Right. There's no authorization for him to do this.
Right. He's not a lone wolf.
Yeah. Like, it seems he's either getting funding, and if he's not getting funding, he's funded himself through his previous wins. And, you know, I think in this movie, he was looking for funding. But I think they played it to the degree where... it was either this or the last one. He was trying to get funding from the looks of it. But this one he was assigned, actually. So he was recruited, right?
Right.
So I think, but he's got his reputation by then. That's what he kind of used to do. So when he's at the start of the movie on that boat getting that artifact from that guy, and it's just a fun little 30s-style serial adventure, you know, it belongs in a museum.
Right.
I love that scene because it just reestablishes him as Indiana Jones. He's off on an adventure. He's going to that golden talisman. You know why he's there. And it plays off that this is one of his backdoor Batman-type adventures, but he's got to be back at school on Monday.
Right. DuckTales.
Yeah, ooh. No matter what anybody told him from an authoritative standpoint, you know, oh, you can't go, this is ours now, whatever, like, he knew, no, this is the right thing to do, screw, you know, any sort of
although I'm sure he collected his rewards, but
yeah, from the museum, I think the museum funds his
moral
stuff, right?
Reward. It
belongs in an American museum. An American one only.
If you guys could choose your dad, would you rather have Sean Connery or Robert Patrick?
Robert Patrick.
The T-1000 of all dads.
Peacemaker's dad. Or do you want?
So obviously Sean Connery.
So here's the only thing, I guess, is Sean Connery was away. He was distant. He moved. He wasn't around. However, Robert Patrick, well, he's always around. He's always, Augie Smith is always around drinking beer at the kitchen table.
Right. So do you want an estranged father, or do you want, you know, you want a piece of shit one that's actually around?
Yeah.
Do you want a piece of shit asshole insults everything that you do and say? Or do you want a father that kind of lets you be because he's got his own shit going on?
Yeah.
I'll take that one. Thanks.
Yeah. There you go. Talks of a fifth Indiana Jones coming. I didn't quite enjoy the fourth so much. I kind of hope they just stopped here at the Last Crusade. With hearing about that, are you guys excited for a fifth, or do you think it's a franchise that should have just stayed in the past?
I think they're really screwing up the redos here. I don't think they should be dipping back into this. And I know Harrison's desperate for a win before he dies or retires or whatever he wants. But I think if they thought the fourth, like I understand the fourth one, I get it. It was the 50s. The 50s was all about Mars and space and everything. When you think about it, it was like rockets and ships and all this stuff and Flash Gordon and everything. So it makes sense that they went an alien type route. But it was more about the mystery of it. And what's his face from Trans? What's that guy? Shia LaBeouf. Mm-hmm. I've never really liked him. So having him in the whole movie was almost like a Jar Jar thing for me.
Do you hate men?
I cannot stand them. They're the absolute worst of the sexes. I think the new Matrix, I just saw that. It was really unnecessary. I don't think they should be dipping back into this. Even though I would love to see some new Indiana Jones, it's more about the idea of it than anything else. And go, oh, yeah, cool, new Indiana Jones. But then you actually see it and you're like, oh, it's not really had in my head.
Chris Pratt, Indiana Jones?
No, thank you.
No? Okay.
No. No, we're done with Chris Pratt.
First of all, I think Harrison Ford's had some wins recently. I really like Blade Runner 2049. I also like The Force Awakens, too. So I feel like he could go out still on a bang without doing another Indiana Jones
What was movie. The last movie you said? What?
The Force Awakens.
The Force Awakens.
Have you seen it? Oh. It's done by...
I've seen it yet. Was it the George Lucas guy you said earlier?
Yeah, actually, George Lucas is affiliated with the Star Wars.
Interesting, okay.
Franchise. My feeling is I'm going to say, because the Crystal Skull was done by Steven Spielberg, so it was trying to get the whole gang together, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I think that just on that alone, there wasn't anything going. But I feel like this next project is maybe like a new director, new cast other than Harrison Ford. So I think they're trying to look for something new out of it. My prediction is it'll be better than Crystal Skull. I don't know if it'll be justified to bring it back again, but it will be better than Crystal Skull.
I don't think so. It'll probably be too hard.
It'll probably take place in the 70s then. So what do you think of that? What would the plot be, Russ?
Free love.
Free love and
Vietnam.
Cocaine.
Vietnam? I don't know, Jeff. I can't think that
80-year-old Indiana Jones goes to Vietnam War.
Yeah, Apocalypse Now. So you see Harrison Ford in the beginning of Apocalypse Now, and then you see him at the end as he was in the original Apocalypse Now.
He can show up on the set of them filming American Graffiti and see a younger himself and be like, what?
That's my bad joke somewhere in there.
No, that was a bad joke.
I feel like Indiana Jones has its own tone as far as some things. Like the punches are very distinct Indiana Jones punches.
They've always
got the whip crack into it, you know, and the John Williams soundtrack throughout, you know. I was listening to it. It's like, oh, that sounds a bit like Jaws. Oh, that sounds like a bit like Star Wars. And I was like, no, Sean, it sounds like John Williams. And that's
right.
So, yeah, I don't know. Some things that have just stayed with me over the test of time that if you hear or see, you know, you automatically can relate it to Indiana Jones. And I like that, you know, like, you know, the Star Wars sounds, the Indiana Jones sounds, and, you know, along with like the Die Hard sounds, you know, Die Hard's punches are very distinct. If you ever heard one, you'd be like, oh, yeah, you know where that was from. So.
And him doing his own stunts just plays out so well. And he obviously, he looks like, and the reason Die Hard did so well is because it was an action hero who was allowed to get the shit beaten out of him.
He was an anti-hero, wasn't he? Yeah.
He was an anti-hero. And you can see Indiana Jones has got blood coming out of his lip. He's dirty. He's filthy. He's covered in dust. He's always covered in cobwebs. And they're like, he's dirty. He doesn't know what he's doing half the time. He just lucks out and takes a wild guess.
What I love, hates snakes. I love that line, you know, the... oh, they're shooting at us. And he's like, happens to me all the time. And he like throws his hat on and just kind of goes for it. Yeah.
It's just a Wednesday for him.
Got to be back in school on Friday. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah, I love the father-son stuff in this movie. I love
that. That held up the best, I think. I thought Sean Connery did amazing. I thought he did a great job in this.
Like, how would you react if you were tied up with your dad and you found out that the last girl that you boned was the same one? You know, a little weird. They kind of chuckled about it, but I think it'd be a little strange knowing that you took your dad's sloppy seconds.
I guess so.
Yeah.
But I don't know. She's quite the knockout. So.
I think they understood the espionage situation they were in, and that's just an accepted part of espionage.
Right. Right. Just part of the job, eh, Jeff?
Yep. That happens.
Jeff's been there, done that. Yeah, Allison Duty, who played Elsa, I thought she was, she's beautiful. That whole outfit at the end of the movie, that did it for me, man, with the goggles. That was it.
Her Nazi outfit with the goggles?
Yeah, it could have been a sexual awakening for me at the time. I don't know. It's quite possible. What year? 1989? Oh, definitely. Yeah, there's something going on then.
Well, it took place in 40.
Yeah, but I watched it as a 10-year-old.
Oh, true enough. Yeah, so you thought it took place in 1989. There were still Nazis around?
Yeah. Hey, dude, I've seen American History X. There's Nazis now.
That's true. I'm curious why he didn't heed his dad's advice when they were pretending to hold the German girl for ransom to get the diary, and they threatened to kill her, and his dad's like, oh, don't, she's a Nazi, you know, and he's like, and he gives the gun, you know. He's been trusting his dad this whole time with the diary on where to go and all this, and then all of a sudden, you know, he decides to ignore his dad, or do you think he had such a boner for the lady then?
And he trusts his dad as an academic.
He was clouded by his dad
as just a common sense kind of guy.
Right.
Yeah, he wouldn't take his dad as a, you don't know anything about ladies, dad. Yeah. Don't worry about it.
Yeah. You know stuff about the Holy Grail, but not the Holy.
You don't know women, Grail. Dad. I do. Happens to me all the time.
Gotta be at school on Monday.
Oh. Do you want to say anything else about it?
No, I don't think I'm good.
Booby traps. Yeah, no, good booby traps in this movie.
That's all what it's all about. That last like bit there. It's all about the booby traps.
What I didn't understand, was in the and we can cut this out, this is just talking here, the whole when they went into the tomb in the library and it was filled with petroleum, and then he makes a torch and he's carrying it around and there's like drips.
Yeah.
You could see it dripping, but it took one match to light the rest of it. See, so
that's the kind of things that was tearing me out of it.
A little bit of like, if you're gonna,
that makes sense,
if you're gonna identify one, you kind of got to stick to your guns, and they should have maybe, I don't know. I guess they didn't have flashlights back in the 1930s, but I'm sure they had a lantern of some sort. I don't know.
If this is the part where we're nitpicking, there is the shot where the tank slams down on the after the cliff, and there's obviously the dummy with his arms out straight. If you look at it, you just see the dummy just and it's still kind of sitting there in the same position. Looks pretty damn silly, but still a good stunt.
Yeah.
I also don't like, I'm not religious, so it's very strange to have this movie literally take historically from the Bible.
Right.
You know, like that's, you know, to me that's, it's a world where this is actual history. And there's obviously magic involved when the invisible bridge and everything, like that's real magic.
Yeah. That dude's still alive. He's been guarding the Grail.
Yeah. He had the strength to wave like peace out when the shit was fine.
Thanks for leaving me.
Thanks for coming.
Yeah. Well, okay. Explain to me this. Cause maybe I was just checked out by the end, but okay. So do they have, if you drink from the chalice, you get never-ending, you live forever, correct?
But you have to stay within the confines of the...
Oh, okay. I thought the cup had to stay within the confines, but not the person. So in order to have the benefit of having eternal life, you need to stay within the cave.
The chalice has to.
The chalice has to, but both Indy and his dad drank from the chalice. So are they going to live in the world of Indiana Jones...
No, but I think because in the Crystal Skull they've aged, so it didn't work.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work.
I think, he got healed outside of the. No, he was.
No, he was still seal,
Indiana Jones drank
on the side
of
the seal.
Of
yeah,
but when he poured it on his wound, his dad's wound, it's healed him. So he healed him. So he was within the seal there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, okay. But he also, Sean Connery also drank from the chalice first, and then it was poured on his wound. So I feel like both should have. Live Forever? No?
Maybe that's why we're getting Indiana Jones 5. Indy keeps going.
Well, he was Sean Connery's, like, his dad was dead at the start of 4. But they didn't really say anything about...
Dad's dead.
3. Yeah.
Dad's dead.
They said when dad died or something like that. But sorry, then he also aged what's he didn't 20 years.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So that's why...
Who knows, Russ? Who knows?
Well, that's why I think this movie is stupid.
You like everything until the idea at the very end.
Yeah, everything was really jiving for me. Everyone was clicking. Everything was.
I bought into everything until the end.
They drank from the chalice.
That tall blonde really carried it for me until they drank out of that cup.
Yeah,
exactly.
Yeah. Well, what I do know what was good was having our friend Jeff join us on the podcast today. What a fabulous addition. Great. Thank you so much for joining us, Jeff.
Yeah, your superhero knowledge is amazing.
Woo-hoo. Thanks for inviting me. Yeah, if you ever need superhero knowledge, just lay it on me.
Hey, Russ has a tendency to pick them, so I'm sure we'll see in a couple weeks.
All right.
I like this and you like that. It's just another...